Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Mark's Remark, hosted by yours truly, Mark Radigan, back with another big interview. You know, I really love working with the Rhode Island football team. I mean, going to the University of Rhode Island, it was one of those schools where it was like, yeah, the sports are great, but do they really have good football? When you're talking about FCS programs, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, it's not Alabama, it's not Notre Dame, it's not all these crazy big football schools, but it still gets quite competitive. And Rhode Island has been one of those schools, if you're a college football sicko, it's one of those schools you want to pay attention to because it's been on quite a meteoric rise over the past couple years. And so I've had the pleasure to have a number of different players and staff members and people involved with the program on this show over the past couple years. And I'm pleased to add to that list with a nice friend of mine joining us, current defensive back for the Rhode Island football team and a native of Pawtucket, Rhode Island. It's Rhode Island's own Andre DePina Gray. Andre, my man, welcome to the show. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Dude, of course. I mean, this season has been big for Rhode Island. I mean, you and I were talking about this before we got on. Last season was unprecedented, a historic year for the Rams. I mean, you're talking about 11-3, making the playoffs, a share of the CAA conference title. And so after that season, which, I mean, for those living in Rhode Island and in Ocean County and down by Narragansett, seeing a successful Rhode Island football program is kind of just unheard of. This was a team that was rumored to be getting dropped 10 years ago and fold in on itself. But now we're talking about a program that has goals of contending for a national championship at the FCS level. I mean, unheard of coming out of the Ocean State, but this season has been a just, you know, business as usual if you're taking it from last year. 7-2, 5-0 in the conference. But, I mean, just from you on the defensive side of the ball, kind of what has this season been like? How have the vibes carried over from last year? Because, I mean, it's been a hell of a good start to the year for you guys with three regular season games left to go.
It's been a transition from last year's defense. Like, we had a lot of graduating seniors, a lot of guys that left. So, you know, trying to rebuild and have new guys step into new roles was a really big thing that we focused on in the spring, especially myself and some of the older guys who were returning in that room, trying to build that chemistry between everybody and understand that we have the same goal every year and that we can't dwell on what we did in the past. Yeah, we won a championship, but it's move on. We're a new team. A lot of those guys were gone, so we had to build our own new identity and how we wanted to play defense. And we knew that our defense, all three phases coming together, was something that we had a goal on this season. And I think now as the year's coming along, we're starting to get November football. That's what football matters the most, and we're starting to finally come together and hit on all cylinders. And it's showing that what we can do, we're all on the same page, all on the same, and like every phase, you know, everything's hitting on all cylinders, explosive plays everywhere, and being stout on defense. It's been a grind. Obviously, you have a late season bye. Last year, we had a early bye in the year, so like the late end of the season was a dogfight trying to get through nine games after playing three or playing four. Now it's like you played through nine. Now you have a week, and now you have to finish out your last three. So a lot of teams can fall into this like kind of sluggish thing coming through a bye week, especially the end of the season. But we've been chopping wood and preaching to push on through everything. Like, just because we're on a bye week doesn't mean we can't stop preparing. So, you know, it's just trying to continue to grind, like sharpen our edge every single day.
Yeah, so you guys are in the midst of a bye week right now. And I mean, you're coming off of three straight wins, talking about a big win versus New Hampshire, a massive just demolition of UAlbany, and then a really big win over Bryant in the Battle of the Ocean State. So you're riding a decent amount of momentum right now, just like you did at the start of the year when you started the season 4-0. I mean, coming out of the gates like a bat out of hell, you beat Campbell, you beat Stony Brook, you have a barn burner 9-7 win over Holy Cross, and then you beat LIU on homecoming to start the season 4-0. Two losses in a row, don't really feel good right after that. Loss versus FBS Western Michigan, and then you lose the Governor's Cup to Brown. Not the most ideal thing in the world, considering Brown are, you know, Brown, but at the same time, Brown are getting better, and you can't win them all. That said, though, kind of just with how this season has been progressing so far, 7-2 overall, 5-0 in the conference, gunning for a CAA championship, what was this summer like? Obviously, a lot of guys left last year, graduation to the transfer portal to the NFL draft. So this summer was a lot about sort of retooling, reacclimating guys from last year, bringing in new guys to get used to the playbook and to fill holes from guys that left. So just walk me through, as one of the more veteran guys on this team now, what was this summer like kind of preparing for this season, knowing what the expectations were last year, having gotten a share of the CAA title, having gotten a playoff win, and knowing that the expectations were going to be even higher in 2025, what was this kind of summer like to prepare this squad for what was going to be a difficult fall from pressure on the outside and on the inside of the program?
It was a grind, honestly, in the summer. Coming in summer one, I had the opportunity to come in during summer session one, so I came with a lot of the new transfers, a lot of the younger guys who were supposed to step up in their roles. And just kind of getting the group together and understanding that it's open season. You know, everyone's going to be competitive for spots. Every spot is open. And we got to figure out what our identity is as a unit, because we had our identity last year, and now it's gone. There's a whole new unit. So it's just understanding that we had to grow and build, and we can't really just associate the past with what our team is now. That doesn't make sense. It's a whole new team, and it's trying to work it through those. You know, obviously you're going to butt heads, especially with guys, new guys coming in, trying to buy into the system. But I think that was really the goal, was to get everyone to buy into the system, how we do things at Rhodey, and just how we run our defense and just our expectations and our standard. That's really what we tried to harp on, especially in the summer. And going through those workouts really built us up together as a group, and making sure we were being competitive with each other, and also just pushing each other to be better and developing, especially like coming off of my stuff and getting injured during the season, trying to get over all that stuff, and a lot of the guys dealing with their own personal stuff. Just coming together and having this as an outlet was really beneficial. And I think it brought us together as a group of guys like who had, I don't think any of us had really played together at all, played a snap together, wherever we were at, or if we were still on the team, maybe we didn't play. But I think it was only two of us that had played a snap together. So just building that overall chemistry that you really didn't have with in-game reps was really crucial in the summer.
And that sort of camaraderie, that chemistry, really goes hand in hand with like establishing that crazy standard, because that was really the talk of the team last year, was that really intense like next game mentality, taking every single game as if it's a championship and making sure that you don't lose focus on the task at hand. Really instilling that standard is at the core of a successful football team, and you kind of see that with how this season has progressed. I mean, started the season 4-0, two straight losses, one versus Western Michigan, then the Governor's Cup versus Brown, and then the three games after that you go beat New Hampshire, which is one of the hated rivals of Rhode Island. Talked about that a bunch on this podcast. Well, never forget that game 2 years ago, that sort of, you know, robbery, I think some might say, right? Some meaning all might say a little bit of robbery there, but we don't got to touch on that one for too much. But no, you beat New Hampshire handedly. You go and get a ridiculous win over the University of Albany, and then you beat Bryant, which is the biggest Ocean State rivalry game that there is. And so there's truly a standard that really seems to have been set. And I'm just curious, from when you're looking at this roster, this is a team now that people are comfortable saying, okay, this is one that we're expecting to be contending for a championship, whether in the conference or actually making a deep push in the playoffs. How does this roster compare to the one last year? Because last year was a lot of veteran guys, because like you said, a lot of guys graduated, a lot of guys declared for the draft, a lot of guys hit the transfer portal and looked to move up to FBS. So you lost a lot of talent, but then brought in a lot of guys and then had the summer to sort of gel together and figure out how to really work well off each other. But looking at these sort of two rosters with similar expectations, kind of how do you feel they stack up right now?
Yeah, like I said, it was an older group last year. This group is a lot younger, a lot of younger guys, and I think that's what helps this roster. I think that's what gives it identity. It's young, it's hungry. Like, a lot of them have a chip on their shoulder. Maybe they didn't play last year, or maybe at their other school they didn't get an opportunity, and it's them being able to put forth what they were able to do, put their talents on the field. And I think that drive, that hunger really has shown up in games. And we do what we did last year. Like, our thing was harping on always trying to win the fourth quarter, always trying to, you know, be stout and all our stuff, and just compete till the very last whistle, until who cares about the score, until there's zeros on the clock, then we'll look up at it. And I think that kind of resonates with a younger group who hasn't really had that much experience in game, but now being in it is just like, take it each play at a time, each quarter at a time, and just keep doing your one job, your 1-11, And I think that's really has resonated with this group and just being young and hungry and competitive. So obviously we're going to scratch and claw and get whatever we can and try and provide for our team as a whole group, whether it be special teams, whether it be offense, be defense. And I think that's kind of what came together as a team. Like, we were working towards it last year, but I think we're coming together as a full team. It's full. It's not offense, not defense, not special teams. It's all one collective unit, one whole heartbeat. And I think that's something that we pride ourselves on now, building for these last 4 years that I've been here, from 2022 all the way up until now. It's been knocking at the door of being a whole complete unit and understanding that one heartbeat type of mentality. And I think it's now starting to see, we always talked about it, I think 2022, 2023, we always talked about, we were knocking at the door, 7 wins, 6 wins, 8 wins. We're like, what would it be to finally open that door for us? And we saw what it was last year. And now we just continue to try and open up that door for ourselves this year, because each year the door closes, no matter what we did to get in or what we did to not get in. You know, that door always closed at the end of the year, so you have to go open it again. So I think that's kind of what we wanted to establish as a group, as especially just a young and hungry group.
And you've been a part of this sort of revitalization of the program since the beginning. I think like 2021 is really the first year that this program took a serious turn for the better. And then 2022 is when it all really started to settle. But I'm curious to hear a little bit of your overall recruitment journey, because you're another Rhode Island kid. This program has been known to recruit heavily from Rhode Island as the flagship university of Rhode Island, the big university in the Ocean State. You want to get a lot of the local guys involved to really grow this program, and you're one of those guys coming from Pawtucket. And so, I mean, to really turn the clock back, Andre, I'm curious, tell me where football really started for you. I mean, we talked a lot with like guys like Marquise Buchanan really playing a bunch in Northern Rhode Island up in Providence, but I'm curious for you, was football always something that was a massive part of your life? Where did your overall love for the sport begin?
My love for the sport came when I was 8. My stepfather introduced it to me, and he convinced my mom to let me start playing. And I started playing in the town of Darlington, playing for the Darlington Braves that are now disbanded. But I started playing from when I was 8 all the way up until high school, going to St. Rayfield Academy. I always had the aspiration to play in college. I always wanted to go D1 and everything. Wasn't really heavily recruited until my junior year. I started getting a little bit of interest from local schools around like Mass, all the New England area. Brown was very heavily interested in me early, along with URI, and an unfortunate injury my senior year kind of cut down my recruitment. I ended up coming down to between Bentley in Massachusetts and URI, and I ended up taking the walk-on spot at URI. But just that love for football had always been there as a kid. I just never had the opportunity to play. I always remember watching on TV. I remember clearly watching every Super Bowl the Patriots had been in. Even those tough losses to the Giants. I remember watching all those and just falling in love with the game, with just how fun it was. And I played all different kind of positions growing up, from offensive lineman to fullback to running back to quarterback, all the way up through high school, and now playing defensive back here. So, you know, I've been through a whole lot on this sport, and it's just, for some reason, I can't get away from it. It's no matter how bad things seems are, like, even if I'm losing, it's just fun to play. And I think that's what really drew me to this sport around other sports, because I did have a first love. It was, you know, growing up in a Portuguese household, I loved soccer with all my heart. I love soccer, and I still keep up with soccer. It's kind of one of my pastimes. I watch it, play the games all the time. You know, that's something I really enjoy. But for some reason, football just drew me more in, and that was kind of the sport I picked in high school. It was either one or the other. I couldn't play both. So, you know, playing football was just something I was really passionate about, something that was really fun that led me all the way up until here.
Was it kind of hard to make that decision? Or at one point when you kind of really leveled it, was it easy?
I think I played that sport since I was 3. So it was kind of hard to tear me away from it. And I kind of had to come to that understanding when I got to high school. They didn't let me play both. It was one or the other. And I felt as though, especially with now just how the systems work with each sport, I felt like football was the best opportunity for me to further my career, because obviously it's very hard to, with all the systems in place in the U.S., to really make it to the pro scene, and even in the college scene in soccer, especially in Rhode Island. it's just very hard compared to a lot of European countries. And I felt like football would be the better opportunity for me to go to college and, you know, try and further my career professionally. So it was kind of an easy decision. Got to get into that point. It was kind of one of those where, like, I would miss it. But, like, in high school, every time I got to the winter, I'd always play in the winter leagues and all that. And I would still just keep up with the sport in general because I did love it. So, you know, it was hard to not be able to play it in high school, though.
At least continuing your career through football and really excelling at it must have it made the decision, you know, a little bit easier to get used to. But I'm curious, with that injury your senior year, how did your mentality shift at that point? Because I can imagine that when you're going into this college recruitment process, you're probably really high on yourself, really high on your overall game that these schools are looking at you. And then once you get a serious injury and the schools become a little bit more hesitant to offer you that scholarship or offer you that spot, I can imagine that that probably really hindered your overall just like, you know, mental health, mental performance, and how you looked at your overall career, you know, trajectory. How did that injury impact you and then impact the overall decision to come to the University of Rhode Island?
I was my senior year, I was finally getting a little bit more into the limelight, into the New England scene of just football in general. I was getting to know a lot more and talk to by a lot more people, and it kind of felt like I was on a roll. And then it was unfortunate that it happened in one of the last games of the season, in an important game too. It was a state championship, so just the way everything happened, it was just, it hurt, especially for myself, for that school. I really embraced St. Ray's a lot, so it was tough for me not to be able to finish what I started. Especially it was kind of like here, where the program, my first 2 years there, we didn't make the playoffs, where we were just missing out by one or two wins. And then you go into my junior year, even though it was COVID, you go in, you go undefeated, number one seed all the way through the playoffs, get to the Super Bowl, you lose, and then you do the same thing your senior year, and you're unfortunately unable to finish the game, to losing to my now two teammates, Tosin and Marquise. Still a little mad about that one, but
totally not bitter at all.
Yeah, no, it's water under the bridge. But you know, it kind of did hurt, and then, you know, seeing the effects of it all, it kind of put a chip on my shoulder. Because even going through high school, I wasn't really highly touted. I wasn't really talked about as much as one of, like, the key players in Rhode Island to watch out for. So it was kind of like I was always in the background. And that kind of put a chip on my shoulder to, like, I always had the goal of proving people wrong. And, you know, just having people see me. Like, not in, like, any cocky way, but just being able to acknowledge me, being able to respect me. And that's kind of, like, what my mentality was going into college. And I was, in my head, making the decision. It was, like, if I wasn't getting offered a scholarship by a school, I at least want to try and give myself the best opportunity. Why not take a risk on myself? And I kind of made a bet with myself. I talked about it with my mom, and she probably won't be as open about it as before. She wanted me to go to Bentley. She wanted me to go to Bentley really bad. But I told her I wanted to make a bet with myself, and I told her I would get on scholarship when I came here, and I would prove it to the whole New England, the whole state, that I belong here. And I was kind of proving to myself as a kid, you know, oftentimes I struggled with having self-confidence and believing that I actually could do something with my life. So, you know, just proving to that little kid that it was possible and it was okay to take that bet on yourself. You don't have anything to regret. And that's kind of what drove me to take the offer here at Rhode Island. I love the school in general. So I was like, why not take the risk and bet on myself? I feel like I could fit in with this program. I feel like the coaching staff really has a good going for me, and I feel like they really do support me. And, you know, they did, all the way on, everyone that's been through here, even the players, all of them, even now my current coach, who was a captain my freshman year, like, they all have, the support they've shown me and the mentorship they've shown me is really just irreplaceable.
And that's the thing. If you were to create a blueprint about what the perfect way to succeed as a walk-on would be, that mentality would probably be in massive block letters and in bold right at the top, to go in with a chip on your shoulder, to go in knowing that you have to do the dirty work in order to succeed. And so that freshman year, you're a walk-on, you're a redshirt, you are at the bottom of the totem pole, if there ever was one. And so that season can really wane on you mentally, knowing that you're essentially just a practice guy. You're another body on the field, so the starters can really not have to exert that much effort in the pregame reps. And how did that sort of allow you to grow in like a weird way? How did you see yourself sort of evolve, and how did that work in that sort of determination that you had through that redshirt year help propel you into the fold and actually get you on the field your sophomore year?
I think I took it as a, I understood being a walk-on that it wasn't going to be an easy road, and I knew that first year I wasn't going to play. So my whole goal was to develop and learn our playbook as quickly as possible, kind of set me apart. And I think that's what sets me apart as a player, is just my football IQ and just my ability to learn and my want to learn. You know, I like just learn football in general. It doesn't have to be just a play, but just learning the ins and outs, just not my position, but a whole defense, a whole offense. And I think that's what kind of sets me apart from a lot of people in this sport. And it was just understanding that instead of taking it like, oh, I'm not playing my freshman year, this sucks, like all I'm here is just practicing, I don't even get to do anything on game day. I kind of took it as a, you get a year to practice against the best guys on your team. So I got to practice against Ed Lee. I got to practice against Marcus DeShields, Caleb Warren, Kasim Hill, every day on scout team. And just being able to sharpen my skills and playing techniques that I know I'll use eventually when I do get my opportunity, and so I can be best prepared for it while still also studying my side of the ball and understanding what I need to do and what's being asked in my position. It's kind of just using it as a developmental year. And my former defense coordinator, Coach Cooper, when he was there, he kind of told me that the most development a player will have in college is his freshman spring. So going into that spring is like really where you'll develop the most IQ wise, physically, but just technique wise. That's kind of when you went through your first semester. Now you're adjusted to college a little bit. And now it's like you're getting a lot of reps in spring ball and your defense or your side of the ball. And now you're kind of honing your skills and developing even more to try and put yourself forward upcoming there. And the development goes from there. So I just, him, Coach Lorenzi, Coach Yanni, just their ability to mentor and coach, and their coaching style is really, I think, was really beneficial for me. It's just they, no matter if you were a walk-on or a scholarship, five-star, it didn't matter, you were coached the same, and you were the same standard was expected from everybody. And I think that's what I loved about their coach style. That's what made me want to go there. And that's what I like about just that whole school in general, is that standard is the same for everybody.
I like how you brought up Coach Yannakopoulos, Henry Yannakopoulos, for fans of the show, friend of Mark's Remarks, former guest. He was a former linebacker, now a coach on the defensive side of the ball with Rhodey football. But he was another walk-on. He was a guy that kind of went through this same sort of story. And I remember him talking about these lessons that he had learned about really sort of just putting your nose to the grindstone and staying determined and continuing to ply your trade. And he also just talked about the overall like hierarchy in the locker room and how a lot of the older guys would really try to look to the younger guys and help to develop them and get them to those positions. Because over the years, you've seen a lot of walk-on guys really excel and get to those higher up levels on their position groups, but also in the overall leadership in the locker room. And so did you have any guys that you gravitated toward your freshman year and then going into your sophomore year that you tried to at least mold your game or maybe a little bit of your character on and off the field after to try and stay in the good graces of the coaches and make yourself look as good of a player as you could?
I had in my position group, I had five seniors, so I knew I wasn't going to be able to see any of them when the time actually did come for them to go on. But I really, during my fall especially, Coach Yanni took me under his wing, and I kind of wanted to model my game after him, because he would always tell me that the smartest football player always stays on the field. You don't have to have all the talent in the world, but if you know a lot of things and you know pretty much everything, your football IQ is high, it'll be hard to take you off the field. And I kind of try to take that as, you know, I understand I'm not the fastest DB. I'm not the like most technically sound with my technique and like man or zone. Like, you know, I understand football in a lot of ways that people don't. And I understand where to put myself to be in positions to succeed. So him taking me under his wing and just seeing how hard he worked with his whole story, his whole background, how long he had to wait for his opportunity and how he made the most of it, kind of inspired me. Him, Leek Gavick was another guy that I gravitated towards. Those are two or more of the older guys that I kind of gravitated myself towards and kind of learned from, especially when eventually I did work up to traveling my freshman year which is crazy for a walk-on freshman to earn his way traveling. It's really kind of unheard of sometimes. But my first game was like Monmouth, and just watching them play that crazy game was just like really inspiring to me. And then going into that spring, just being around Jordan Colbert and Sean Feloy, Emmanuel Gomes, those guys I built bonds with for the rest of my career. You know, it's guys that I could talk to, especially because some of them went through what I was feeling mentally, and they were guys I could go to when I built certain ways just to talk and see, try to get their input and how they went through, if they went through similar things, what their mindset was, how they went about things. It's just understanding the people that came before you and walking on the foundation that they laid, not trying to, it's okay to create your own path, but use the foundation that was put in front of you to propel you to higher heights.
And that spring really did propel you to higher heights, because then in your second year, you went from not featuring for Rhode Island, getting on that travel squad, but not actually touching the field, to then appearing in all 11 games. And so there was a great big transition for you there, going from that redshirt guy to one of those guys that's now getting called upon for special teams and on defense. And that year for you as well, I know, was difficult off the field too. So, I mean, just kind of that overall transition from that spring through that summer and then into that fall into your redshirt freshman year, what was that overall shift like for you? Because at that point, you're starting to see a little bit more responsibility asked of you from the coaches, and then overall your teammates are relying on you more because, yeah, there's a little bit more pressure to perform. If you're going to be the guy called upon to go make that play as a DB or go make that play on special teams, you're not the walk-on anymore. We're like, we need you to add something. We need you to contribute. And so I can imagine that there was a lot of pressure there that could only add to the mental strife that comes with just being in this position, plus everything else that was going on off the field with you and your family. But just overall, what was that time period like for you, everything with your mom and then just kind of getting acclimated to your new role?
Yeah, it was kind of like my whole perspective on college sports kind of just flipped on its head. It's like anything could change in a moment. That summer, you know, I was feeling good going into summer session. I got invited, even though I still wasn't on scholarship, I got invited to come back to summer session 2, which isn't always available for walk-ons and stuff. So, you know, I was very appreciative of that, and I wanted to make the most of the opportunity. And then right before I left, I found out that my mom had been diagnosed with breast cancer. So, and me and her are very close. She was a single mom growing up till I was about the age of 8 or 9 until I met my stepfather. So she's basically my rock. She did a lot of things and sacrificed a lot of her dreams or her aspirations and did a lot of things that a 22-year-old woman shouldn't have to do, like with their career and stuff. She's just getting out of college, you know, but she did a lot of things working 2 or 3 jobs just to make sure that I was fine. And, you know, just seeing that and understanding it more, you don't really understand it when you're young. You kind of just be like, oh, mom's just, she's just working. But, you know, understanding now when I'm older, you know, there's a lot of respect I have for her. Obviously, she's my mom, but it's just even more respect I have for her as a person, as a woman, for what she did and tried to provide for me. And I feel like I couldn't ask for anything more out of her for what she provided for me. And I'm forever grateful. I can't repay the debt that she did, like, for me and to put me in this position to succeed. So, you know, it was a lot of my heart going into that year. And it kind of pushed me more into, like, I got to make this work. You know, obviously things as a walk-on sometimes don't work out, especially like trying to pay for school and all that. And, you know, with her chemo and stuff, it was hard, you know, to try and get through things. But, you know, it just made me more determined to try and reach my end goal, which was to get on scholarship. So going into that year, going into the summer, I made my goal of getting on special teams. I knew if I couldn't play on defense, I was going to make an impact on special teams any way possible. And a shout out to Coach Gilmer for giving me an opportunity to get on the field through special teams. I ended up starting against Georgia State, starting, I think, on punt return. I made a couple of plays on punt return and then eventually worked my way onto all four towards the middle of the year. So I was on feature on all four. That's really kind of how I had my mark. And I think the guys in the locker room and I think the guys on the coaching staff just kind of saw the way I kind of worked, didn't complain, just kind of did my own thing and just waited for my opportunity. And I think that kind of garnered some type of respect from them, because it wasn't like they didn't treat me any different from a scholarship player in the locker room. They kind of respect what I was doing, and they kind of just respect the way I went about things, and they were that was a guy they could talk to, and you know it was good. It was a good feeling, especially with all I was going through. They were very supportive of me and my decisions, especially shaving my head before the first game against Stony Brook. You know, it was a heavy thing for me to do, and I appreciate my teammates, Darius Savage, for actually being the one to cut my hair and all that and setting everything up. So, you know, that whole thing was very emotional for me, and just the amount of support I had from my teammates, from the coaching staff, from the university, you know, I can't thank them enough for all that. You know, there's a million things I could say to all of them. It was just a very tough time for me. And to have that support system all around me, it just made me feel better. It didn't make me feel like I was alone. So I think that's kind of what propelled me forward, just keep moving and eventually work my way onto defense. You know, it's kind of like you think, oh, it's not really going to happen, or when it happens, it's not going to feel real. And it really didn't when I got an opportunity to play. So it's kind of like a dream come true, finally stepping on the field, not just special teams, but actually stepping on to play defense at a Division I school in an actual televised game. It's kind of everything you dream of. So it was kind of surreal going into that game. But, you know, I wanted to put my best foot forward and try and prepare myself even more forward to being even in consideration for a starting role or even a bigger role in the next season, just knowing that you don't get that many opportunities, especially as a walk-on. So once you get that one opportunity, you got a season, make the most of it, put your best foot forward. And by the way things happen, I think I did that.
I mean, I can only imagine what your mom must have been thinking, and just your family must have been thinking when you made your debut versus Georgia State. I mean, you stepping on the field versus an FBS school, even though it's only on special teams, but as a walk-on stepping onto that field, I can only imagine the feeling that must be setting in, how surreal it is to be looking around, seeing all the hard work that you had put in, and then to go and play defense against a team like New Hampshire and get your first two career tackles must have only compounded that feeling even more as the season's going on. And so I can just, as it was progressing and you started to see the fruits of your labor really show, and you had now kind of really gone from that walk-on to playing for the Rams, and you've consistently seen yourself play for the Rams and make a tackle, throw the jersey on and dust the turf off and everything. How did that feeling sort of evolve over the season? Was there a point where you got comfortable and you were like, okay, I feel like I belong? Or was that something that didn't really hit until like after the season was over?
Yeah, I think when I had my first tackle, and it's crazy, my first tackle came against an NFL running back now. Shout out Dylan.
Ridiculous.
Lamy. Yeah. So, I mean, after that first tackle, it kind of feels surreal. You know, like you run down on kickoff and like, you're like, all right, it could go to any of the 11 guys running down on kickoff right now. And it just so happened to come to me, and I ended up making the play. And it's like, in the moment, you're celebrating. Yeah. And then you get to the sideline, and you're like, actually had my first career tackle. And now it's like, kind of like, all right, you can tackle. You can tackle a Division I athlete who is an NFL prospect. So it's like, you're like, all right, now I'm starting to feel like I kind of belong. But it wasn't like, I didn't get complacent. It's like kind of like you get that, like as a kid, you get that one touch of sugar and you're like, you get that one piece of candy, now you're like, I want more. And not in like a greedy way, but like the feeling I had being able to play like that, it was just like I wanted more and I didn't want to look back. So it's like once I got that first taste, I just never wanted to look back, and I just kept pushing and kept pushing and kept pushing. I was never satisfied with what I had. I wanted to keep pushing. I wanted to be better, and I wanted to keep stacking higher and higher, stacking a day. And I think that's kind of what just kept driving me throughout that season. I was like, all right, you had one tackle. Now can you make a better play? Can you tackle more? Can you actually get on the field on defense? Can you be a three-dimensional player? So now it's like, they put you in, they don't have to worry about anything. So now it's like kind of like just trying to build myself up more and more and more, and not being satisfied with what I had, but trying to push, just get that one more every single time.
And 2023 was a year that was like just ended in really no other way to put it than like a heartbreaker. So agonizingly close to being in playoff contention and being right there, as was it obviously getting passed through in 2024. But that spring afterward, now you're starting to see your role change a little bit. Now you're starting to see yourself become a more important part of this defense, and you're starting to see yourself play a more significant role in the spring. Like, you're not the guy that's just there to serve as a body anymore. And so how did that differ for you? Was that an adjustment that you were comfortable making, knowing that now, all right, I'm now more ingrained into the plans. The coaches are drawing more things up for me to participate in. Was that a change that you were comfortable with? And just how did that spring ultimately then prepare you to go into 2024 as one of the starters?
Absolutely. Yeah, that spring, now it's like, You're looking at who's left, who's still here, who they're bringing in, and it's like, hey, now you like that opportunity you've been talking about through your past 2 years here through high school, it's here now. Now what are you gonna do with it? You're in a spot where it's now there's no excuse. There's no excuse for you not to get what you want. It's just either you got it or you didn't. You worked hard enough or you didn't. So it's kind of just that moment is like, I'm comfortable in that kind of spot with that kind of pressure where it's like, hey, you got your moment. Now what are you going to do with it? No one can save you. It was that moment that I was like, I can't ask anyone to save me or give me the spot. I have to earn it. And that's kind of the mentality I went through, even though it was spring. Spring is, well, it's not always given. So I just want to go out there and put my best foot forward and just want to earn everything that was given to me and just give it my best shot. And if I didn't end up winning the job, then I just had to work harder. It wasn't anything that it wasn't politics, it wasn't nothing. It was just I didn't work hard enough, and I wanted to make sure that I didn't have any regrets. I made sure just the way I carried myself day to day in that spring, it was I want to be in a spot where I have a bigger role. I had to taste a little bit of what it was like in 2023, and now in 2024, I want more. I want a bigger role. I want to be able to be a key feature. I want to be on the field more on defense. So that's kind of what carried me into that spring, was just it was a competitive thing. And everyone in that DB room understood that. And we were all just pushing each other to be better, pushing each other to be competitive. And I think that's what drove that room to be as close as we were that year, going into 2024 and just all the new bodies we brought into, just for them to buy in, just seeing how competitive we were, but how close we were at the same time. It wasn't a destructive, competitive nature where it was like putting each other down. It was more building each other up.
And that buildup was really building to a season of historic proportions. I mean, for those that aren't really familiar with Rhode Island football, there's no other way to say that this was the best season in program history. You're talking about a first playoff appearance in 40 years, a first playoff win in 40 years, a first share of a conference title in ages. I mean, you're talking about a program that less than 10 years ago was getting zero wins. And now we're talking about an 11-win, an over 10-win program contending in the conference and making runs on the national playoff stage. And so the 2024 season was one that people are going to look back on forever as one of the turning points for this program and the growth that it continues to go on today. And so that spring and summer must have been intense. But what were the expectations that were set? Was it always from the jump in 2024 that was going to be the year that you guys finally broke the glass ceiling and made it into the playoffs and made noise in the CAA? Or was it one of those where you knew you had the talent, but maybe not necessarily was openly proclaiming that this was going to be the year? And it was something that kind of picked up as the games went on, because that was another season where it started off pretty hot and then there was a wry result here and there. But then at the end of the year, everyone was like, okay, this Rhode Island team can seriously make some noise.
I think we went into that summer just understanding that what we needed. We knew it wasn't 7. We knew it wasn't 8. We knew it wasn't 9. We knew exactly what we needed to get in. And we knew exactly what the goals we had set. And we understood that talking about a championship doesn't make a championship appear. It was what we did in the off season. We just pushed each other harder in the off season and just understood that we can't try and think into the future and the talent we have. Yes, we built a whole new group, and that talent was like, we're ready to go, and we just want to pride ourselves on taking it one game at a time. And it was just continuously, like Coach Flem says, just 3 more feet every single time, and just being that ability to have competitive greatness is something he really preached about, is being at your best when your best was needed. And I think we understood that. We had our moments in previous years, and we weren't our best. We try to pride ourselves now on just being ready for any moment and just whatever the situation is, just put the ball down and let's play. And I think that's what kind of drove that whole team, was understanding that one play wasn't going to change a game. One quarter wasn't going to change a game. It took all 60 minutes to put that score on the on the Jumbotron or whatever scoreboard it was. That's all it took. It was 60 minutes every single time, sometimes even more, because you could see a lot of those games went into overtime. It was just continuously pushing. And it was understanding not to, like, fracture or falter when something bad happened on offense, defense, or special teams. The other side of the ball, just picking each other up and just making each other understand that we got each other's back, and just trying to continue to help out each other as much as we can. If someone's in a slump, trying to pull them out of it or make a play to help them understand that that play's over with. We still got a lot of ball to play. And I think that's kind of what just inspired that whole team to just continuously push and continuously narrow out those wins at the end of games when it seems like, oh, there's no way we win this game. It's just belief. Just having belief, I think, is something that came about throughout that season. It's just having the belief.
And it was a breakout season for a number of guys on the team, including yourself. I mean, you went from having 4 tackles in 2023 to 38 the year after. And I'm also kind of curious, tell me about being an anchor bearer. Week 3, you were the anchor bearer, and you always see Rhode Island guys picking that up every so often, and it's always cool to see those guys leading out the Rams before the game's really hoisting that anchor high. But I'm curious, just for you, as a Rhode Island native, just knowing how ruckus the atmosphere can be in Meade Stadium, what was that like? Did you foresee yourself doing that for years? And was that just like the fulfillment of a little bit of a personal dream for you? Because I can only imagine that was adrenaline filling, running out with that anchor in your hand.
Yeah, no, the anchor bearer is always an honor, like one of the biggest honors you can have going into a game. And to get it that early in the season was like just felt surreal. You know, I've seen it for the 2 years before that, people running out with that anchor, and the amount of like inspiration that gave to me, and I was like, I want to do that and have the ability to go out in game 3 of my first season starting. It was just like, it was surreal running out, crowd, like just to see all those stands fill and just the energy around that stadium. It's a unique place to play, and just being able to go out on that logo and plant the anchor, it was a really surreal moment. It was actually really fun.
How did they go about actually deciding that? I've never gotten the chance to ask Coach Flam or Coach Yannakopoulos about that, but what is the overall decision-making process? Is it like the best leader in practice that week, or is it just a guy that they want to highlight for showing good character in the locker room? Just what did they say to you to describe why you were chosen for it?
I think it's kind of all those things put together. It's just guys that are representing of the state and just what they're doing, how they're carrying themselves off the field, on the field, and what they're doing. And it's decided by the coaching staff along with the game captain. And it's kind of just one of those where it's like just honoring a guy who's been putting his head down, who's been working, and they want to highlight that week or what they've been doing that season. And just the kind of honor for them to lead out the team along with the game captain. So I think that's kind of how they do it. I haven't really heard much of how, like, what exactly they decided on, but, you know, it's kind of like just seeing who's been picked for it. It's kind of the trends I lean towards.
Oh, that makes sense. I mean, it seems to be a guy, at least from when we're sitting up in the press box and we get to look down and see who's actually doing it. Most of the time, it's usually a high character guy, and then you can kind of put the pieces together from there. But I can only imagine that at that point, that might have been I made it moment for you. You've had a number, I can imagine, throughout your college career, but that's got to be one of where, as like a Rhode Island guy, you're like, you know what? All right, I've done it. This is me being really a part of this program, and the hard work is really starting to show off. And another one's got to be at the end of the year, claiming a share of the CAA title and then making it to the playoffs. Historic, like I'm probably beating a dead horse at this point, saying it so many times, but being a part of that team, to actually go and do it. Everyone has been talking about, when are Rhode Island going to make the playoffs? When are Rhode Island going to win the conference? When is Rhode Island football going to be good? Because there's been so many people investing their time and energy in order to actually bring this program up. And in 2024, that's when it finally happened. So to be there, be a Rhode Island kid, and be one of these guys in this long line of walk-ons, preferred walk-ons, to then redshirt and work their way up, What was that feeling like at the end of the season, at the end of the CAA regular season, and then even in the playoffs, even losing in the playoffs, just the fact that you guys made it that far and got a playoff win to open the postseason anyway. So just what was that end of the year like for you and overall just for the team as well? Because I can only imagine just how, in a way, relieving it must have felt to know that those expectations were on, to know that that pressure was on, and to then finally be the group that did it after all these years.
Yeah, it was very fulfilling. I know for players and I know for the coaching staff, especially Coach Flem, he set out to build up this program from what it was when he got there in 2014. I know it was very fulfilling for him to finally capture that ultimate goal, because we always wanted to be CAA champions. And just to have it happen like that, it was just very surreal for the program. And I know it meant a lot to this university in general and to the state in general, for the public university to finally put their foot down and show that they're a premier program now. And they've built themselves up since Coach Flem has come in here, and he's done a great job with how he's been running the program and how he's been trying to build up this program over the years. And everything that we've done has been a slow grind and building blocks year after year after year, building off the foundation, and all came to beneficial for all of us to finally get that moment. It was just really fulfilling to see those faces in the locker room, from support staff to coaches to players to everyone there. It's kind of that, it was a surreal feeling. It was kind of a one-of-a-kind thing where the emotions are just so pure seeing everyone in those moments. So, you know, it was really touching for me, especially like just watching this program growing up and just being able to be a part of history. It was really surreal for me.
And 2024 didn't end in a national championship like maybe even the most optimistic of Rhode Island fan might not have pictured, but it was a step in the right direction and really laid the groundwork for the expectations of this year. And like we talked about at the start of the show, this year has been pretty good, because the Rams in 2025 are 7-2, and they're 5-0 in the conference and are looking like the favorites to win the CAA outright and really make some noise in the postseason, in the expanded FCS playoffs. Top, I think it was 13th in the coaches poll last I saw, and you've been bouncing around the top 10 all season. And just for you personally, and then with the team, but having been a part of that locker room that got a taste of silverware for the first time, how true is it that once you get a taste for silverware, it's addicting, and all you want is to go back and win it again?
No, absolutely. Especially for me personally, just the way last season ended, I wasn't happy. So, you know, just understanding that it's possible, the blueprint is there, and now is it how much can you build off of that blueprint? And I think it was just improving from last year. Like, people were like, oh, you won a championship. What is there to improve on? There was a lot to improve on from us as a team, me as a player, just understanding that job's not finished and that there's a lot I could work on for myself to be even more beneficial to this team. So, and I think we understood as a team, everyone had something to work on. And I think that's what we kind of did, was just building off the success, but not also dwelling on that success, kind of putting the rearview mirror. We celebrated, yes, we needed to celebrate it to get it out of our system. But now it was like, all right, it's over now. Something we can do to get that feeling back. Unless we keep taking it one day at a time and keep moving forward, you can't keep looking back. So it was just being able to live in that present mindset, not looking too far in the future and not looking too far in the past, to just keep living in the present day and be where our feet are. So I think that's kind of like what I kind of wanted to put myself in, and just understand that there's a lot I could get better at, and just how I carry myself and how I play, and just developing those techniques to be the best football player I could be going into this season, just continuing to develop and be better each year. And I think that's kind of what we've been priding ourselves on, especially with this new group.
And I imagine that that's the lessons that Coach Flem and his staff are hoping that you and the rest of the upperclassmen are imparting onto the younger guys, the walk-ons, the freshman recruits, and so on. And for you, how has your role in the locker room kind of evolved? You're a guy that's been through it all. You have these experiences, and you have this understanding of what needs to be done to grow in this program and be a part of its success. So have you kind of taken it upon yourself to become more of a leader in the locker room and really look to try and mold the next generation of guys, especially on the defense?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I get joked around about, for even though I'm 21, it's just how long I've been here, just being here now going into my senior year. It's just like, now I'm, what do they say now? I'm unk. you know.
Oh, he's Zunk.
I'm OG, like, you know, just being around the program for a long time. I've seen the evolution of the program, and I've seen the standard be set higher and higher, and just trying to get those guys who are coming into the program, especially in the DB room, just to understand what it takes and what we're asking of each other and out of you as a player, as a person. It's just like trying to show them that it's possible and that there's been success and there's a reason for our success. It didn't just come because we're talented. It didn't just come because we're good at football. There's little things that we focused on that were allowing us to be successful as human beings and as players. And I think I found more and more of my voice as time went on. You know, I understood that I had respect in 2023 and I got a little more in 2024. I started finding my voice a little bit. And now being one of the older guys in the room, it was kind of like, this is your moment now. What type of leader are you going to be? And I kind of pride myself on being a leader by example. I try to use my voice sometimes, but I know my actions speak louder than my words. If I'm just preaching about something and I'm not doing it, that doesn't make it right. So just being able to do the right thing at all times and showing that I can follow it. So just if you follow along too, it's just building that kind of thing where it's like, understand that we like to do what we do, you know, and just being around for this long, you kind of develop kind of habits that you know is good to pass down to everybody. Just trying to get everyone to understand that and just coming together as a defense, understanding that there's going to be a lot of guys who want to have a voice in the room and just being able to lead each other and be led when need be, because I can be led as well. It doesn't, just because I'm an older guy, doesn't mean that I always have to do all the talking. If another guy needs to lead, or if I'm not feeling the best, or I'm in a slump, another guy can pull me out of it. So it's just kind of having that understanding that everyone has a voice on the team, no matter how big your role is or how small your role is.
It's well said. And so be honest with me. Did freshman year you really expect for you to be in this position, for it to have worked out the way it has? And just because you talked so much about really putting in the work and trying to excel, to grow with this program. But coming on as a walk-on and then redshirting your freshman year, I mean, like we talked about, that can be difficult for any young guy to go through. But you're a guy that seems to be quite resilient and really prides himself on being able to work through that form of adversity and take it as a step on, a stepping stone, if you will, on the journey to success. But honestly, did you expect to be in this position where you're top 10 in tackles senior year and you're competing on a Rhode Island program that's contending for conference titles, that's contending in the postseason? Like, was this all part of the plan, but did you expect this sort of success, or has this kind of continued to surprise you as your career has gone on?
There's kind of some expectations. I think there wasn't a lot of expectations, but I did expect myself to play, but the role I was having became more and more like possible through guys like Yanni, watching Yanni my freshman year, then watching Emmanuel Gomes and Sean Folloy the years after. Showing that there's guys who are walking my path right now who even had it worse. And it's like they had the ability to come out and be dominant when they played. So just showing me that it is possible. It's just all about, will I take my opportunity and will I make the most of my opportunity? I think that's kind of what I put myself into, and I was just like, I was happy, like, you know, I was happy to be able to have that opportunity. Like, no matter how my career goes from here, it's just, I live to have no regrets, and I think I've been living my way through college football like that in general, is just to not have any regrets when I played. I try to do everything I can to play every Saturday, no matter if hurt, injured, doesn't matter. I just want to live with no regrets because I know football can end in a snap of a finger. I've sadly watched it several times in college, and it's just, my heart hurts for those guys who aren't able to play anymore or who have the ability to play taken away from them, and I want to make sure I put my best foot forward for them and not take it for granted, because that kind of shows them disrespect in a way, because they'd be dying to be in my spot right now to be able to still be able to physically be able to play. But, you know, God had other plans for them, and it's unfortunate as it is, it just did happen that way. But, you know, for me, I was fortunate enough to still be able to play this game, and I want to play with all the respect it needs and all the respect that it demands.
And you guys have 3 games left this season. There are a lot of expectations for some serious postseason glory, but from you, from the players, just what does the rest of this season look like? What's the momentum feeling going into the final three games of the year? How confident are you all feeling? How confident are the coaches? And kind of what's been the overall team message in practice over these past couple weeks as you guys are looking towards the end of the year? Has it just been to remain focused? What have you guys been thinking of?
Yeah, it's kind of taking it 1 week at a time. Obviously, we're on a bye week, but like I said earlier, just because we're on a bye week doesn't mean that we can't continue to prep. And it's just understanding that we can't take any opponent lightly. We just got to keep taking it one game at a time, 1 week at a time. We can't worry about Maine. We have Elon. Can't worry about Hampton. We have Maine and Elon. So it's just being able to take those weeks 1 week at a time and respecting our opponents. I think that's a big thing we try to harp on, is just respecting our opponents and understanding that they play football too. They have scholarships too. We're going to get everyone's best shot no matter where they are in standings, no matter where we are in standings. They're going to give us their best shot. It's November football. It's what everyone dies to play for. So just being able to understand that we can't get complacent. You know, it's okay to have confidence, but it's not okay to have arrogance. So we have to play with controlled confidence and controlled focus in what we have for these last three games. And then we determine our own destiny from there. It's all about what we do this week. That starts off whatever we expect that we want to do or what we do want to do. All it takes about this week.
And obviously in football, or at least with Rhode Island too, you want to focus on 1 week at a time. But for you personally, I'm curious, because you and I were in the same major before I graduated in May, both big sports media guys, part of the growing Rhode Island Harrington School of Communications. But I'm curious for you. What's your end goal? What are your goals looking like beyond Rhode Island? Because I know everyone, when they're playing college football, the immediate goal is, hey, I want to make it a league. I want to go pro. And I know that that's your goal. You've shown enough determination in this interview as it is. But beyond that, you're a guy that has really taken the initiative to work in sports media. Because, I mean, you and I have crossed paths at soccer games, at baseball, at softball, at track and field events, when you were working at the URI athletic departments in the sports information office and so on. So, I mean, just as a guy working in athletics as an athlete and then taking the chance to work on the other side in the sort of production, the stats, and working in media, kind of what are your aspirations once this is all said and done in college?
Like you said, obviously the NFL is a big dream of mine. Professional football is a big dream of mine, but you know, not everyone gets the opportunity. I'll be blessed if I'm able to play in that, in any of those leagues. But you know, if that doesn't work out, my football career ends here. I love being around sports and I can't get enough of sports. So I've always grew up wanting to be like a sports broadcaster, play-by-play analyst, kind of like just anything like that. Having my own talk show like this, you know, just being able to talk about sports and give my passion to the world and also entertain people and just being around sports in any way, shape, or form. I think that's something helpful for me. And like, as much as I love sports, there's in sports media, there's also other passions I've taken on that to keep me around sports. Like I even like over the summer, I started my own sports car company, just collecting and selling sports cars. Just because I love the sports so much and just trying to keep up with everything. And it's just something I enjoyed because obviously, like, football is a very draining sport. And if you try to keep just football as your end-all, be-all, it's going to eat you alive. So you have to have things to be able to get away from football at times. And I found some new hobbies, you know, to go around and do. And I've just always loved being in front of the camera, just talking sports with people. And I'm just very passionate about sports. So just the stories behind them also are just something I want to bring to people. And I want to bring to light stories of people that you don't really hear of. You always hear about what they're doing on the field or some things that they're doing off the field, but you really don't get to know an entire person. And being an athlete, I understand that their sport is not just who they are. They're an entire whole other entity outside their sport, and that's kind of what I want to bring to the sports media market.
Dude, I couldn't have said that better myself. See, this is why I wanted to get you on the show. You're a guy that thinks like me. That's the same sort of approach. We want to share the cool things that make sports so unique. We want to share those interesting personalities, and the personality like yours, Andre. I mean, that's why I'm thrilled that I get to do this sort of show and get to talk to guys like yourself, because fans really don't know a lot of the intricacies that go on in the sports world to provide the product that they all love. Like, you don't know the backstories of the guys that are throwing their bodies on the line for you every Sunday. So it's like really cool to be able to do this. And I love seeing other people just as passionate as myself to try and break into this industry. And I mean, you're a guy that has so much knowledge in this field that I think you're going to do fantastic. But I'm also fairly confident that a football career is going to be looking good for you as well, as it has for a lot of Rhode Island guys. And the draft, I'm excited to see. I mean, a lot of Rhode Island guys been getting their names called in the draft a little bit in that draft process, getting those undrafted free agents, getting those mini camp invites. I mean, Andre DePina Gray might have to add that name to the list in a little while, but I know you've obviously still got another year of eligibility and you still got this season to focus on. And is this season championship or bust, or is this more you're kind of continuing to push yourselves further up into this conversation of, okay, we're a team that can contend on the national stage?
I think it's just building. We, you know, obviously, if a national championship comes with it, that's, we're obviously blessed to have that. But we just, like I said, we just take it 1 week at a time and just continuing to build off the foundation. Obviously, we still got to open the door first, so... You know, we can't think too far ahead, but we just got to establish ourselves as a team that's always going to be in that conversation. But we can't dwell on it too much. We just got to take it one day at a time, because there's teams that have done that where it's been championship or bust, and then their standard slip. We can't have our standard slip.
Hell yeah. That's the answer right there. That's what all people want to hear. That's the laser focus that has seen Rhode Island football just become a juggernaut in FCS, particularly in the Northeast. And it's just been so cool to see how this program has been revitalized thanks to guys like you, Andre. But I mean, dude, thanks so much for coming on today. This was awesome. I mean, every chance I get to talk to guys that play football at URI, it's always so fascinating because that team is so interesting and made up of so many different people. It's such a diverse locker room of so many personalities. And I mean, you've got one of the best ones on the squad. And so thank you for coming on. Thank you for sharing your story with everybody. And I mean, dude, good luck with the rest of the season. We're talking about, again, possibility of going 10 wins in the regular season and making some noise in the playoffs. And I've got some serious faith that you might finish top 5 on the team in tackles. So don't let me down, all right?
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Heck yeah, dude. Well, thank you everyone else for tuning in. Again, thank you all for watching. Again, new kind of era for Mark's Remarks, all on video. You get to see my face, get to see Andre. It's great. But we'll be back with more interviews. Got some more with Rhodey football coming up shortly. A bunch of other teams coming up soon. So don't forget to follow us on Instagram and at Twitter and X, excuse me, at Mark's Remarks Pod. Look us up on YouTube at Mark's Remarks Pod. And just, you know, subscribe, hit the notification bell, stay tuned for more updates, and I'll catch you all on the next one.